Do you know the number one thing that surprises engaged couples? Take a guess. The sheer amount of decisions they have to make while planning a wedding. Indoors or outdoors? How many guests? Are kids invited? Controversial. Which cake flavor? Seriously, how do you even begin to figure out what's right for you? That's where Zola comes in. Zola has everything you need to make every wedding decision a piece of cake, from choosing your dream wedding venue and vendors to deciding how to best spend your budget. With tons of customizable wedding websites, save the dates and invites, every detail will feel like you. Zola will even help you choose the gifts, experiences, and cash funds you really want. The next thing you know, you've planned your whole wedding all in one place. From getting engaged to getting married, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Chad Hartman has a day off. I'm Dave Schrader, sitting in for the remainder of the program. You can tune in and check me out every Sunday night, 7 to 9 p.m. Central, with the Paranormal 360. Right now, I want to talk about the new Nosferatu movie that just came out Christmas Day. Again, not a day I would think would be popular for horror movies, and especially one with such a gothic nature, but I wanted to chat with a friend of mine. Cameron Pasha is a Hollywood filmmaker. He's a novelist. He has worked as a writer and producer on TV shows like Sleeper Cell on Showtime, as well as Nikita, Rain, and Roswell, New Mexico on the CW. He's here to join me this afternoon. Thank you so much for being here, buddy.
It's always great to be on with you, Dave.
Yeah, nice chatting with you. So, Nosferatu, obviously, this is an interesting concept. They've tried to remake it a few times, and I feel that they've kind of lost something, some of the magic to it. I went in with kind of low expectations, and I really liked it. What did you think of the new version of Nosferatu?
Well, I mean, this is a Robert Eggers film, and Robert is really a brilliant filmmaker. He's able to bring atmosphere to all of his movies. That includes The Witch, that includes The Northman, and he brings it here, which is the core of what made the original 1922 silent film Nosferatu work, was this incredibly menacing atmosphere. And that is what Robert Eggers really does homage to here. It's a wonderful film.
Now, you know, the only bone of contention I had, it lagged a little bit for me. I almost felt like it could have been about 15 to 20 minutes shorter. But saying that, I can't think of what I would have punched out of that, because so much of it is in developing good characters that you care about, and even giving kind of an interesting insight to the vampire himself, Count Orlok. And he leans into the weird look of the original, but also has his own take on the way that this villain is represented. Bill Skarsgård, who is now, I guess, the horror movie go-to guy, right? He was Pennywise in It. He was in The Crow. And now he is Nosferatu, Count Orlok. And his voice and presence is so terrifying. And he does so much with so little in this movie. I was blown away by his moving and acting portrayal as well.
Well, what Bill is trying to do there is he's very much trying to honor, this whole movie is honoring the F.W. Murnau film from 22. And he's trying to do that in his performance, because he's trying to honor the incredible performance of Max Schreck, who was the German actor who played the original vampire, and still is absolutely terrifying. If you watch it, you can get it on YouTube, watch the film. He's absolutely mesmerizing, terrifying. But they took it differently. He wanted to let that film stand on its own. And so the vampire looks a little different here. What's interesting is you notice is that it has this sort of bushy mustache, right? Which the people are like, oh, that's interesting. But that's actually a direct homage to the original Bram Stoker's Dracula, which most people don't realize. Dracula is described as having a mustache because Vlad Dracul was famous for his very nice mustache, right?
And that's right.
And you haven't really seen that even in the Bram Stoker's Dracula that Francis Ford Coppola did. The vampire, you see him as a mustache when he looks human, but they remove it because they think it won't add to the creepiness of him as a vampire. But it absolutely adds to the creepiness of Skarsgård as a vampire here.
I agree. The acting in this is well done. This movie, I think, really does a much better job than the Bram Stoker Dracula movie that had Keanu Reeves and Gary mm-hmm. Oldman. That one fell short for me. It was so long and languishing. The sets were gorgeous. The acting was fine, but it just felt like it took so long to create something that Eggers really locked into with Nosferatu. And for people that are not familiar, can you kind of explain the difference between Dracula and Nosferatu, the movie background of this for people?
So the F.W. Murnau, who was a German director in the 20s in the silent film era, he wanted to make a version of Dracula, which, you know, I don't believe that any film version had been done at that time. And, you know, he couldn't get permission from the estate of Bram Stoker. I believe his wife was still alive in the 20s. And so he said, well, you know, I'm a creative director. I'm just going to make a movie about a vampire. And then he makes this other movie that's not set in Victorian England. It's set in the 1830s of Germany. And he goes off and does it. What actually happened is, because it's still hues very similar to the Dracula plot from Stoker, Stoker's wife sued him. She sued him, and she won. She sued him for copyright violation, and she won, and the court actually ordered the destruction of Nosferatu. So all copies of it were destroyed under legal order, and then it was considered a lost silent film that only historians mentioned existed. And then in the 1970s, someone found the one canister that had been forgotten in some studio closet that was still around. And so as a result, the movie was then revealed to the world. And people are like, this is a work of utter genius. How could this have been lost for all these years?
Oh, it was never lost. They put it away knowing that they were going to just wait out that copyright law, and then it would become public domain and they'd get it back out there. And I'm glad they did, because it is. It's a classic movie. And again, it's doing so much with so little. And I love the fact, and help me, Cameron, because maybe I was just so enthralled with this movie. This is a vampire movie. This is Dracula movie. You think of these, and there's always so much special effects. This seemed like it was strictly, what do they call it when it's not CGI? It's practical effects.
It's practical effects.
Right.
And, you know, both the original film and what Eggers does in this one is really cinematography.
Right.
That's you know, he honors it because Eggers has access to all the modern, FX stuff, and he doesn't use much of it. He uses a lot of cinematography. He actually really does homages to the shadows, which is what Murnau did. He used shadow to create menace, which is what Eggers does as well.
And in the original, of course, being a silent movie, there was no vocal to go with this.
Yeah.
The way that the have Bill Skarsgård speaking, the intonation, the voice is so freaky and chilling. They nailed it. I love this version. But it also helps reawaken that concept that at the heart of it, it's really kind of a love story.
Well, absolutely. And that's what the original Dracula was as well. It was about Mina. But what's interesting about it actually goes back to what you said earlier, Dave, which is that this movie has this longer period. I mean, because you develop character, because a silent film, there's a lot of mystery. You don't really know much about Count Orlok. You don't know why he's obsessed with a girl in the movie, right? Whereas in this film, you get the sense that there's some kind of cosmic destiny between them, and that's through the character work that we do in the long periods of this film.
Let's do this. We're going to take just a quick break. We'll come back. We'll talk more with Cameron. I want to talk about the ban on Wicked movie that a couple of people are seeing as a potentiality here in the next few years. And I'd love to hear from you, the listeners, on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line 651-461-9226. Horror for the holidays? Do you like that they're releasing horror movies around Christmas? Seems October's kind of light where it comes to horror movies now, and we're starting to see them in the holiday rain. What's your thoughts on that? Do you like that? We'll chat more when we return right here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Yes, it is. Why? Because I'm Dave Schrader filling in for Chad Hartman. And our guest on the line, Cameron Pasha, we're talking movies, entertainment, horror for the holidays. Cameron, are you for it or against it?
Well, I mean, I think horror is a year-round phenomenon. And, you know, and some people ask me, why did they release It's Nosferatu at Christmas? I think it's actually not about Christmas time. It's about the fact that they really believe they're going to win Oscars for this movie, and I think they will. And, you know, Oscar is when you release them in December, is the movies like Wicked that you're aiming for, because Academy voters tend to vote in early part January, February, and so they remember the films most recently that they've done.
Ah, so that's the shenanigans behind it. That makes more sense to me. It's so strange, and it is a beautifully done movie, Nosferatu. I certainly recommend people go check it out, see for yourself. Understand, like I said, I felt maybe about 15 minutes too long, but I couldn't tell you what I should have removed to make it flow a little quicker. One, it sucked. Five, it's amazing. Where do you put this in your pantheon of scores?
I'm going to put this at a 4.9 because I'm going to give the original Nosferatu the 5.
All right. I like that. Now, this is the news that just came out. A provocative take that's sparking, I guess, a lot of buzz. Director Adam McKay recently suggested that the new movie Wicked Part 1 could face bans in the United States within the next 3 to 5 years. Why? Because McKay says the film tackles bold themes like propaganda, fascism, radicalization in ways that might not sit well in our increasingly polarized political climate. He called Wicked one of the most radical big studio films ever made, and with a cast that includes Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo, it's certainly getting a lot of attention. But McKay's comments raise bigger questions about how art and entertainment intersect with politics. So can movies like Wicked spark meaningful conversations about the world we live in, or are these concerns about censorship and backlash really the sign of our times, Cameron?
I have had some interactions with Mr. McKay because I work in Hollywood, right?
Right.
I will say this. I wouldn't take anything he says seriously. He's a man who likes to create drama online to get attention. His own ex-partner, Will Ferrell, who's one of the most liked people in Hollywood, is no longer speaking with him. So that kind of speaks for itself. This is a gentleman that I think is creating a controversy for his own ego, frankly. I'm being very frank about it. And so I don't think there's – obviously, Wicked is not going to get banned. I mean, he's one of these people that's still thinking that the next 4 years of Hollywood, like 4 years after this election, we're going to turn into 1942 Germany. And people in Hollywood aren't saying this anymore. So he is he's in his own little world trying to create drama. So no, Wicked speaks for itself as an artistic achievement. We've always had films warning against propaganda. That's what filmmakers do.
Right.
I mean, they warn against government oppression. And whatever side of the political line you are on, generally, most people don't want government oppression. They may define what that oppression is a little differently, but they don't want it. And so filmmakers tend to critique it. Star Wars is about that. I mean, if you are right-wing, you can use Star Wars to critique, what you think are communist governments. If you are left-wing, you think the empire is a fascist government. The point is oppression is wrong, and Hollywood has always made movies about that. So I think we shouldn't take Mr. McKay very seriously on this.
All right. I was fascinated by the thought and the concept. But again, looking back at things, during COVID, a lot of us returned to watching and binging our favorite TV shows. And even things like 30 Rock, I was like, oh, my gosh, a brilliant show, clever, smart, fast, really racist in some moments. And you think, how are we okay with this joke 5 years ago? How are we okay with this slant on the story? And, you know, and I'm not even one that's easily offended. I know a lot of people say, well, of course not, because you're a white guy and you're not going to be offended by the jokes. But I get the humor and the sarcasm behind them. The pointed nature of what they're actually trying to say is more ironic than it is where they're going for the racist or bad joke element of it.
You don't have to be white to want controversial comedy to force people to think. I mean, Dave Chappelle and Chris Rock have been doing that for decades, right? And so I will say this. I was recently at a dinner with several very successful screenwriters and TV showrunners. It was actually last week, a pre-Christmas dinner. And they were saying that the change in Hollywood that has happened is, frankly, since the election, it was building up to it, but since the election, they're actually getting directives from the studios to saying, I think we need to go back to the way things kind of were. I think the audiences wanted more complex storytelling. I think the audiences want more white men on screen. There's nothing wrong with that. And that's a very different narrative than we've had for a decade now. And I think that's a return to the center in Hollywood. That's what we're seeing.
Well, we are. We're seeing a lot of trial and error in TV. And again, mm-hmm. it's still a business, right? I mean, if you know that, hey, this sci-fi show is really slanted towards sci-fi fans, but as we're seeing, sci-fi fans are mostly in this kind of group and age and race and religion or belief. You accommodate for the fan base, and then you create other shows that might be more directed towards somebody else, right? I mean, that's just kind of the way the story needs to go. And
that's how business works.
Right. One of my favorite shows for sci-fi has been Doctor Who. They made this leap that they're going to change the main character to a woman. There was all this uprising. And I even got into a very bad fight with a friend of mine who was taking things so personally when I said, boy, I just hope they're not doing this for the wrong reason. Her response to me was, oh, did you worry about that when Matt Smith or David Tennant got the job? And I'm like, no, but I want them to be making a good series good, not just, oh, look, we're relevant. We've got a female lead. And the problem was they didn't write well for Jodie Whittaker. The show languished. It did not do well because they didn't know how to write properly. And that's what I think a big problem with Hollywood is that there are characters. Listen, Walking Dead had been a juggernaut, but its female characters were not written very well. They don't, there's not an even keel for some of these people that you really should have. I think it shouldn't just be written for a woman. It should be a well-written character where it doesn't matter what sexuality, what race, what, gender they are. It just fits the character for who they are.
I mean, and again, this is nothing. The myopia of sort of maybe younger generations is lack of information about the past. This has always been the case in Hollywood. I mean, the strong female character. I mean, we've had Wonder Woman existed for decades, right? I mean, we had Emma Peel in the Avengers in the 60s as a and so in the 80s was the era of female power. You had Ripley in Aliens, right? You had Sarah Connor in Terminator, and no one was sitting thinking that they're trying to push female leads as a part of a political agenda, because they weren't. They're trying to tell good stories, and everyone embraced those characters. And I think what we're going to see now is a return to just good storytelling, at which point no one is going to care about the race or the ethnicity of the character, because they're going to be following the story. When the movie is just about, here, look at the person we've cast, then you're not following the story there, right?
Right.
And so that's what pulls people out, right? And, it's like as if you cast Will Smith in Men in Black and say, look, we cast a black man in Men in Black. How much is making a movie about Men in Black? Which is what they did. And that's why it was successful, right?
Exactly.
And that is what Hollywood is now returning to. So Mr. McKay's comments are really on the fringe in Hollywood at this time.
Cameron, it's always great catching up with you. I know we've got to talk again. Maybe I'll have you on soon on the Paranormal 360 here on WCCO and get some insights from you on that as well. Thank you very much. I hope you have a wonderful new year, and we'll be talking again soon, I'm sure.
Thanks so much. God bless, Dave.
Thank you, my friend. Have a good one. All right, we're going to take our break here. When we come back, we'll take a look at some weather, traffic, and we'll continue our conversations. I'd love for you to be a part of the show. 651-461-9226. 651-461-9226. Mega Millions equals mega chances. Are you buying? Are you in? We'll talk about that next right here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to the program. Chad Hartman has the day off. I'm Dave Schrader sitting in. Money! All right, the Mega Millions jackpot soaring to, what is it, an estimated $1.15 billion? A lot of people are out there dreaming about striking it rich, including this guy. And, of course, everybody wants to know, are there certain numbers that might be luckier than others? I can't even believe I'm about to share my lucky numbers with you, Josh. I hope you have a pen ready.
I have a brain. I remember everything.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. It turns out that over the past 7 years, some numbers have been drawn more frequently than others. For the main numbers, 3, 10, 14, 17, 31 are among the most common. The Mega Ball, 22, and 11, and 9 have come up the most often. Now, keep in mind, every number combination, according to the odds and stats, has the same odds of winning. Every number combination. That's what experts say. It's all random. and the past draws don't influence future ones. But that said, Josh, as I'm looking through these numbers, I don't know how they can say that so confidently. The most common draw numbers, number 3 has been drawn 70 times, number 10, 69, 14, 65, 17, 65, 31, 46 are both 64, 64 has been drawn 63 times, 66 has been drawn 62 times, 29 has been drawn 20 or 61 times, and 43 drawn 60 times. So to say that, oh, you know, it doesn't really matter about the numbers, because when you look at the next batch of numbers, they drop pretty definitely. The most common mega ball numbers, though, 22 has been drawn 26 times, 11, 24 times, 9, 23 times, 10, 23 times, 18, 23 times. So you've got some good possibilities there. Did you go out and buy your Mega Millions?
Not yet. I'm going to.
You going today?
I'm going to try to.
All right. Well, today's the big drawing,
buddy.
That's right.
So
should we partner up and just remortgage our homes together, go buy 200,000 tickets? We're bound to win.
I don't know if Dave Schrader can remortgage a mansion.
I don't.
It's big enough.
A mansion. So. It's a McMansion. I built it with Legos and some Lincoln Logs. That's about the extent of
Lincoln
the
Lincoln Logs. What a
throwback. Yeah. I'm excited about it. I we'll see who wins. I mean, how many states are part of this Mega Millions?
I believe it's just Minnesota. Nobody else should be allowed to buy.
Right.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I'm assuming all, including Alaska, which some parts of Alaska don't even see the light of day for another couple months. But, you never know.
Well, I'm hoping that we win. You know, and would you take the payout or would you take the long haul? Would you take it over a longer period of time?
I mean,
I think the payout is $540 million.
We know that.
Right.
So, no matter what the IRS, Uncle Sam gets his money. I'd probably take the long-term payout just because it's got to be more than what I'm making right now.
You think?
Yeah.
Do me a favor. Look up what is the long-term payout for the Mega Millions, because I'm curious. I know
believe it's 31 years. But
31 years? But what are they paying you per year then? I know right now you could, if you win it all and you're the sole winner, you can take, it's like 540.
The annuity option is paid out as one immediate payment followed by 29 annual payments. Each payment is 5% bigger than the previous one.
Okay. And then
it helps protect winners' lifestyle and purchasing power in periods of inflation.
Have you ever watched, there's a documentary about lottery winners, and you think these people are set for life. Most of them end up dead like in 5 to 10 years.
Yeah.
Because they just burn out. They blow through their money. People take advantage of them. Family members kill them. It's pretty brutal.
Anonymity is important.
Yeah, that's why I remember a few years ago there was all that static about the guy that won but didn't want he didn't publicly want to be acknowledged as a winner.
Yeah.
And where do you stand on that? Do you think you made the purchase, you know, if the agreement is, hey, you have to collect on TV, you have to be recognized, do you think that's fair?
I think it's hard to say, to tell some people, like family.
Yeah.
Because no matter how much I may love my family, I wouldn't trust them with that kind of information. That would be like, where is the president's bunker kind of situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's that
would
kind
be
of
in your backyard right now because you won $500 million.
Yeah. I would dig a tunnel in my backyard and it leads to China, just like we were told as
really?
Kids.
I don't. You got to go through that magma, which is not good. I just saw Neil deGrasse Tyson just did like a video explaining how it would happen and what would happen to you if you were able to dig a hole through. And it's pretty remarkable. If you get a chance, just to hear Neil deGrasse Tyson tell the story.
Wear a North Face jacket. Those shield you from everything.
Everything. Yeah.
Including magma.
Yeah. Are you going to become a co-owner of North Face when you win the Mega Millions?
Sure. I'll even remake the movie Volcano if you've seen that.
Well, don't do that.
Tommy Lee.
Yeah.
Tommy Lee Jones.
Didn't that come out at the same time? And then there was the other movie with Dante's Peak with Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah. Yeah.
They both came out at the same time.
Yeah. Way to go, Dante. You just had to have the one-up on Volcano.
That's right. And then we had coming out at the same time, you had Armageddon and Deep Impact, both about our world being pummeled by
We're original here in America.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's, you know, once you get wind of it, that we need a good tragedy movie. We need a good...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could buy a lot of McRibs for with the Mega Millions winning.
That's what I said. If I won, I'd buy my own McDonald's franchise, and I would only sell the food there that I like from McDonald's, which would be pretty much McRibs, an ice cream machine that never breaks down.
I don't think even the Mega Millions could keep the ice cream machine at McDonald's from breaking down.
I don't know. Yeah, it's worth a look.
These are things that would I would probably buy this building because it's about if I bought a building in Minneapolis, it's probably about one paycheck of somebody that works at WCCO Radio.
I don't think that's how it works.
No?
No.
Okay.
This is you might not be as good at numbers as you thought you were, Josh.
I would give it to the news team because they're the best.
Oh, they are good.
I'm brown nosing.
Can I have one room for
myself? I do appreciate everybody down the hall.
Can we have one Dave Schrader suite here that I can at least, you know, sleep in once in a while and do my work from? You son of a motherless kid.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I don't know how people can keep anonymity when they win something like this. Because you either are very open about it, like Mr. Firefest was, where he just blew his money on a big, huge festival and it never panned out. Or you could just be, which I don't think he was I think he was a software designer or something. But that's besides the point. I just feel like you would have to be very intricate with how you spend your money.
I would.
Can't just bury
you know what I would
backyard.
Do is, like every other year, I would host a live private concert with one of my favorite entertainers.
Okay.
And just like it's me and 100 of my favorite people, and that'd be it.
So it'd be 100 Dave Schraders.
Yes. 100 of me's. Cloning would be part of my.
I think if I won the Mega Millions, I would start a Winnebago and maybe try a meth operation in my Winnebago out in New Mexico.
You wouldn't need the money. You got $500 million.
Yeah, but why not live out a dream?
Really, your dream is to become Walter White?
Yes.
Heisenberg?
Yes.
Shoot for the sky.
Who can do it better? Yes.
I don't know. I've got more of the look than you do, though.
That's true.
I'm bald with the goatee. Yes. So I'm already halfway to Heisenberg, which should be the name of my biography, halfway to Heisenberg. Let's take a quick break. Oh, we'll come back. JonBenet Ramsey's father is holding an important meeting with police. There's some new information about that. We'll talk about it when we return right here to News Talk 830 WCCA. Welcome back. One segment left together, and then I'm turning the reins over to John Hines and the very talented producer, Lindsay, taking over, walking you through the next 3 hours of this evening's programming. You guys are so lucky. It is currently 2:48. It's your Lindus Construction Time Check. Time to replace your old windows with Infinity from Marvin and get 50% off installation and labor. Big news, Kraken. Today we're revisiting a case that has haunted the nation for nearly 28 years. It's the tragic and unsolved murder of the 6-year-old JonBenet Ramsey. And recent developments suggest now that new efforts are underway to bring closure, finally, to this enduring mystery. And some of this news, Josh, is so exciting to hear. Some of it is just absolutely maddening to me. Absolutely maddening. John Ramsey, JonBenet's father, announced an upcoming meeting with the Boulder police chief, Stephen Redfern, that's scheduled for January in 2025. Accompanying him will be a representative from an independent genetic genealogy research lab. Their goal is to advocate for advanced DNA testing on crime scene evidence, leveraging the latest in forensic technology to finally, once and for all, identify the perpetrator. Now, the initiative, according to the New York Post, is part of a broader push to re-examine 20 untested items from the crime scenes, including a garrote, a ransom note, a flashlight, and rope. The hope is that modern DNA analysis can uncover new leads that were previously undetectable. But they have 20 untested items. How is it that we're 20-some years into this, or what is it, 28 years into this, and we still have 20 pieces that haven't been tested?
As
a father, that's maddening.
Yeah. And that's, I feel like a lot of these, there's a lot of similarities from what people experience here. Patty probably experienced for many, many years with
Patty Wetterling, right?
Yeah, with Jacob. So, and there is a lot of, like, we're this close to getting something, but we aren't, like we couldn't be further away from getting something. And I feel like that's kind of similar to this situation too, where it's like.
But here they actually have had all of this evidence on hand. With Jacob's disappearance, very little was known.
Yeah.
It was just tips coming in. And now since this new documentary on Netflix, they've been getting a new, you know, the cold case, Who Killed JonBenet Ramsey. They've got over, I think, 100 new tips about this case. And it's really, it's disheartening, again, just as a father. But I'll say this. John Ramsey has remained steadfast. People keep throwing shade his way and at his wife, Patsy, right, who's passed away since.
Yep.
And even their son saying that one of them had a hand in this. And there, listen, there are a lot of strange details about this case.
Yeah,
that don't add up. But the fact is, he's never been OJ. He's never, I'm going to go out there and find the, you know, this JonBenet or John Ramsey, rather, has been instrumental in continuing to push for an answer. And I think that if he knew it was him, his wife or his son, he would have backed off that pedal years ago and just said that, you know, and he could have easily let it rest on the laurels of the police department, because the police allegedly have been very hands off. They're like, hey man, we can't do anything more. He had an out. He could have just left it alone, but he hasn't. He's continued to push for answers. And John remains cautiously optimistic, expressing that there are pretty good odds this case will be solved, especially with the involvement of the FBI and advancements in DNA technology. He continues to advocate tirelessly for justice for his daughter, emphasizing the importance of utilizing every available resource to finally identify the killer. I think the big problem on this is going to be that there was so much traffic through that place, right? They had friends and family and neighbors over, I think, while the police were investigating. So how much contact trace DNA and problems are they going to run into now that they're maybe advanced enough to find something? But I will tell you this, right? I've been involved in the paranormal world for a long time.
Yep.
I used to do live events at the Stanley Hotel in Estes Park, Colorado. So I was there in, I want to say it was 2006, 2007.
Yep.
Hosting an event with the TV show Ghost Hunters. I had Jason and Grant and a few of the members of the cast there. And we had about 250 friends and followers of my radio show and fans of the Ghost Hunters TV show there for a weekend of talks, presentations, autographs, pictures, ghost hunts. And during the event, I had this gentleman walk up to me, and he was this little guy, maybe 5 feet tall, maybe real skinny, scrawny, long, dirty fingernails, kind of a stinky guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Walks over to me. He goes, "Who are you, the guy running this event?" I'm like, "Yeah." And he goes, "Yeah, I come up here all the time. I'm big into the paranormal. Can I show you a ghost picture I caught here?" And he wasn't part of our event. He hadn't paid to be there, but I'm always open to see a ghost picture. And he showed me a pretty compelling photograph taken from inside the piano room there in the main lobby of the Stanley. And it was just saying, "I'm the only one in this room." And in the reflection of mirror, you see an old time looking woman standing there in an old dress. Very interesting. He shows me this and then wanders off and leaves. A few minutes later, a gentleman walks over to me and he goes, "Who was that? And why was he here?" I said, "I don't know." I said, somehow he got wind that we were doing a paranormal event. He stopped in. I told him there's no more tickets available. And why? And he said, "You just encountered our number one suspect in the JonBenet Ramsey abduction and murder." And he shows me his badge. He's an off-duty Boulder police officer. And I'm like, "What?" And he goes, "Yeah." So flash forward a year, we're doing another event there, right? And we're set up to do a talk, and the system keeps failing. We're in the big concert hall.
Yep.
And I step up. I'll fill time. What kind of questions can I ask? "What's the scariest thing that's ever happened to you, Dave?" And I said, "I'll tell you the scariest thing. And it's not paranormal at all." And they're like, "What is it?" So I tell the story I just told you.
Yep.
And all of a sudden, in the back row, he stands up. He had snuck into the event again.
Jeez.
Stands up and looks at me, and I just froze. And everybody started laughing because they thought I was joking around. And he walks out, and I'm pointing to the back, and everybody's roaring. They think I'm just having fun. And when he finally goes and the door shut, I go, "Holy beep, that was him." And as soon as I said that, women went over. They were looking out. There were these two little blondes that, again, real short, 5 foot blondes in the front row. They're like, "That dude's been following us around downtown Estes Park the entire time. Oh, my God. He is so creepy, weird, blah, blah, blah." I find out from one of my guests, Chad Kalick, that this guy had found him. And he goes, dude, you got to meet this guy I met earlier today. I go, why? He goes, he said he had some ghost pictures he wanted to show me. And dude, he had JonBenet Ramsey's ghost pictures. I'm like, he had what? He goes, yeah, he opened up his computer, started showing me JonBenet Ramsey's house. He could tell which rooms were where the body was found, knew all this information, and showed me a picture that looked like a little misty girl standing on the front porch. And I just was like, oh, God. And walked out, and the guy's van was still out in the parking lot.
Yep.
It was a white panel van.
Yep.
Could you be any more suspect?
Yeah, correct.
We called the police. Police came and actually stopped him because he was infringing on our – we had rented the whole place out. I owned the Stanley for that weekend.
Yep.
And so they went and talked to him about it. But, yeah, dude, that was one of the more chilling experiences I've ever had.
Crazy.
Yeah, to have this guy in. And I've tried to look, and I still have his name. I've tried to look to see, and I never see anything pop up about this guy. He's never in the list.
Just disappeared.
But to have them say, that's our number one suspect, and showing me his badge, he's an off-duty Boulder Police Department,
yep.
And the guy sneaks in, and the minute I bring it up, he stands up and gets out. Dude, that's really uncomfortable.
Wow.
Yeah. That was one of those moments where time stopped. When he stood
no
up,
kidding.
It was like a horror movie. Time stopped. He literally stood up from the back row. And just locked eyes with me.
Creepy.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah, that's unsettling.
You think?
A little bit.
Yeah, a lot of it. Very weird. Yeah. Very strange. Hey, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks a lot for sitting in with me today, Josh, doing the show.
Oh, it's been a blast.
Lindsay and John Hines are up next to take over the mantle for DeRussia. I'll be back Sunday night where I'm going to be visiting with you and bringing you the best in paranormal talk radio, the Paranormal 360 here every Sunday night on WCCO 7 to 9 p.m. And then I'm back in, I believe, next Tuesday and Wednesday. Tuesday I'll be filling in for Adam and Jordana. On Wednesday, I'll be back in for Chad. That's what I'm going to be up
to. You're a busy man.
I hope you guys will tune in and spend some time with me. You can always reach out to me and communicate and give us a listen. If you missed any part of today's show or any of my podcasts, just go check them out on the WCCO website or...
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Subscribe through Odyssey. That's it. I'm Dave Schrader. Have a great weekend.